Hi, and welcome to the Friends Church Podcast. It's Jeff here, and I'm excited that you're willing to carve out some time to listen to one of our Sunday messages. You were part of a growing community of online listeners who are downloading our messages to support their spiritual journeys, to find ways to make a positive impact in their world, which is really exciting because that's exactly why we're providing this podcast. If you're finding value in what we're doing, I would like to ask you to join others within our tribe who financially support the work of Friends Church. Some view their support in a similar way that they see their monthly fitness club or boot camp dues, where they're paying 50 to 200 bucks a month. Others see it similar to their Apple Music or SoundCloud subscription, where they're paying 10 to 15 bucks a month. Amounts are personal to everyone, but every dollar donated will go into products like this. If you're willing, you can donate easily by visiting www.friendschurch.ca and clicking the red donate button. This will lead you to the Canada Helps portal that is used by many nonprofit organizations to process credit card payments. Just enter your information, including your donation amount, and click the General Fund tab. On behalf of Friends Church Tribe, welcome. We're glad you found us, and thank you. Now enjoy this week's message. I just want to quickly, before Vince comes up, explain something. So 6 years ago, my wife and I were thrust into the snowboarding culture. Our son started getting serious in snowboarding, and so we started hanging out at the hill more and kind of showing some support for what he was doing. And we end up realizing there is a whole subculture that as soon as you drive off 16th Avenue and up into COP, the Winsport area, it's like you enter a different world, different vocabulary, people look different, they talk about different things, the things that are important, what they're hearing in the news, what they're not hearing in the news. I would sit in the lounge and end up yakking with people and sometimes walk away going, man, I feel like I just visited a different planet tonight. Every now and then, I watch people who come into Friends Church who are new, and they're trying to figure out the culture here. I can tell they've been a part of what I would call church subculture. How many know what I'm talking about when we talk about church subculture? Okay, so many of us have had a taste of different church subcultures. I don't know about yours, but I was steeped in a particular kind of church subculture. Lots of church Sunday morning, Sunday night, weekends. Man, I was a part of this Christian school. I mean, I was like mainlining church subculture in a certain way. And yeah, you can pity me, please, all right? So I'm still in recovery. But but there's a certain thing that you come to picture when you've been a part of church for so long. When you walk into a church, you kind of look for certain things that you go, oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Certain songs, you go, oh yeah, okay, I feel like I'm familiar with this place. Okay. And you look at the band. If the band is a little bit bigger than you used to, you go, oh, this is a little different. Okay. And you look around at what people are wearing. Not many suits here. Okay, no one's bringing their Bible. Interesting. So I watch these looks of people who are coming in trying to figure out, all right, what is this church subculture? And how do I identify with this? Is this good? Is this not so good? Sometimes people come in saying, hey, I'd really like to connect with this church. And often what I hear them saying is, I'd like to figure out, how do I connect with this church subculture? Now, that's a tricky question for us here at Friends Church. Because the truth is, so often when we look back and we pour a lot of time and energy into watching how Jesus interacted with his world, so often it seems Jesus was fighting the church subculture of his day. He was not trying to build an elite in crowd that were all kind of doing and saying the same things. He was always stepping outside the church subculture of that day to engage with people who were sitting on the margins or outside. Often the people that became his best friends were people who were saying, I don't really fit well with that church subculture. They were the people that didn't wear the right clothes. They're the people that didn't know all the rules. They were the people that probably, if the x-ray was snapped on them, they would feel like they were very illegitimate in terms of their membership in a church. Which makes us think sometimes, what is it we want Friends Church subculture to be? Or do we want one? You know what I mean? I'll be honest with you. And so we have this tagline that says, we want to be a church for people who don't fit church. Sometimes, if you look at that statement carefully, really what we're saying is, we don't want people to come in and feel like they have to change or morph to fit in here. We want them, regardless of where they sit, to be able to come in and get something valuable without feeling the need to shift and change their own life, their own world. That makes sense? So really what we become about here is trying to help you not so much make this your world and your culture where you come and you do all of life with these people here, but rather it's a challenge for you to consider who is your world. Who are the people you do life with? Who are the people your relationship with? Who are you rubbing shoulders with at the proverbial water cooler every day? Who are your neighbors? Who are the people that God has put you in your world, around you, that perhaps are playing a significant role in your life and you are supposed to be doing in their life? Could it be that those people sometimes aren't even represented here? All that to say this, what looks like getting connected at Friends Church is a complicated question. We want you to connect to the degree that you need to. If you want to come in and maybe you recently divorced, maybe you just recently moved, you got laid off, whatever, and your community where your world is all of a sudden got really small, hey, there's a bunch of people that potentially could be your great friends. Hang out. Some of you, your world is so big and so full right now, the thought of coming in and embracing a whole nother family is overwhelming. Don't bother. Come in. Come to the gym, have a good workout, get thinking, maybe podcasting, whatever, and then get out to your world. We're okay with that. We're not trying to build a one-size-fits-all. We're not trying to reinforce a subculture here. Wear what you want. I could go through a whole bunch of different things. That'll get me in trouble. We're just glad you're here in your own uniqueness, and we hope that to whatever degree that this community here is a reflection of your culture that you fit in or not, whatever, we pray what is most important is that you have a bead on who is in your world. And we want to help you live a God-colored life in your world. All right, I'm done. Vince?
Thanks, Jeff. It sounds like he just came up and whipped that off, right? That's like 6 years of studying it, like meetings and meetings and meetings about this, so... my name is Vince. My dad called me the other day and said, hey, I booked my ticket. I'm coming to visit. I was like, that's great, Dad. It'd be good to hang out. We always have fun. You know, we eat a lot of bad food. And it's really great. So can you forward me your itinerary? You know, so I actually know when I'm supposed to pick you up at the airport and that stuff. Big long pause on the other side of the phone. How would one forward one's itinerary? I'm like, you don't know how to forward an email, Dad? By forward, what do you mean exactly? Never even dawned on me that he doesn't do this, right? You know, he's just finally got this whole email thing dialed in. He's like, I got your email. Not like, I got your email, but like, I totally got your email. I made it work. It's magic. But I didn't even imagine, you know, someone who doesn't live in email like I live in email. Or cell phones. I often ask my dad, you know, back in the day when, you know, we were kids, we lived in an acreage outside of a town. We had no cell phones. So I'm like, how exactly did it work? Like, if you're on your way home and mom needed some milk, how did that work? He's like, well, you drive home, walk in the door, she says, I need milk. You jump back in the car, drive back to town, go get the milk, drive back home. Really? Huh. It's amazing how technology shows the difference in generations, doesn't it? I have friends who live on social media, because it's not just in generations. Even in our, kind of my age group, I have people who live on social media. Like, everything in their lives revolves around social media. And I have friends from the same community, at the same age, who don't even have a social media account. They refuse anything even like that even smells of social media. It's always good to have a party with all those people who show up, right? Someone's like, do you see this on Facebook? And then it's on, like, Facebook's there. How about when you invite different people or people who are religious? But you know how there's kind of like, we're different? You know, we have these people who are kind of like hard atheists, soft theists, soft Christians, hard Christians. And you put them all in a room or a party and you're like, someone brings up something about religion or God or something, and it just all hell breaks loose. And you know, the atheists and the soft Christians are having a great conversation. It's like fun, and the hard Christians and the, you know, soft atheists and these, and it's just like, aren't we just all trying to figure this thing out? Like, aren't we trying to, like, aren't we on the same journey? It's funny. If I reflect back in my life, often it's the people who identify with the same label as I do, Christian, who I have the least spiritual conversations with. Often the most loaded. I was out with a friend, so friends of another friend of mine, and I didn't know these friends. And I said to my friend, are they going to tell me I'm going to go to hell? Which seems like an odd thing to say, since they were Christians and I'm a Christian, and, you know, we're all Christians, but my kind of Christian and their kind of Christian don't play well together. And the way that kind of Christian tells my kind of Christian it's no good is they say, we're going to hell, or I'm praying for you. Which ultimately means you're going to hell, but... Why is there so much tension between people who all identify as Christian? Sometimes my most spiritual conversations is with someone who doesn't even identify as Christian at all. You'd think that if we're like, we're all Christians, shouldn't we all be supporting each other and kind of on the same path? Today we're starting a new series. It's a series that came because of this tension. We all identify as Christian, yet we're not getting along. It's not a new topic. We've talked about it before. But we had so many questions about it, and so many people talk about it, and we did so much learning from it that we said, we got to do this again. It's Scott Peck's Stages of Faith. We first explored it in our series called Base Camp. The interesting thing about it is, me and Jeff and the rest of the teaching team, we have a bit of a unique way of approaching these things. We always think the best thing to talk about is the thing we're struggling with right now. So sometimes you get stuff that's half-baked, we're still in the midst of it, you know, we haven't had it all figured out, we're just kind of giving it to you raw and going, okay, here's what we're dealing with. And our Base Camp series was raw and half-baked and what we're wrestling through. And it helped us understand a lot of things, but right now as we look back, we realize that maybe we didn't do it quite the way we should have. I'm not going to say we did it wrong. That would sound negative towards us, but let's just say we've evolved our thinking over the time. So to explain what happened, I need to go through and kind of talk about the stages of faith. So let me start by asking you this. You ever felt tired? Fighting a cold right now. Feels like, you know, like the other day I was at a store, like sitting up in the store was exhausting. I was trying to lay down in, you know, the Lazy Boy showroom. But you know that tired, it's not like I just had a workout tired. It's just that life just feels like it's taking it out of you, tired. It's not even that it's, you know, you're out for the count. It's that if something bad were to happen, like you're about to snap, you're on that edge. Like right now in Calgary, you lose your job. Even something for me. If someone cuts me off in traffic one more time, I swear I'm just going to lose my mind on that person. You know, you're right in that edge where it's just like you don't have a lot of margin left. Jesus had these moments. I know you all think Jesus is perfect. He never got upset and blah, blah, blah. But he has this moment where he's out with people. He's doing a bunch of work with people. And he's just tired of them. Like he's like, if one more of you comes up here, I swear. So he says, guys, I need to get out of here. And since they don't have cars in those days, he's like, can you give me a ride across the lake in your boat? And so Jesus jumps in the boat, takes off across the lake to have a little Jesus time, right? Just a little chill. I know Jeff thinks he's an extrovert. He's not. He needs a little Jesus time. So Jesus goes to the other side to have a little quiet time. And what happens? The people run around the lake and meet up at the other, he gets to the other side of the, and the people are all waiting for him there. And he's like, oh my. It's funny how that works, huh? You just don't have enough margin anymore. Just don't have enough energy to deal with life. And that's the key to the first stage of spirituality. It's the focus on self. What? Who are you? How do you recharge? What takes care of you? It's this robust sense of self-care, of knowing what we need and what our values are and what makes us happy. It's the thing I had you reflect on. Why are we tired? Usually we're exhausted because we're not living congruent with who we are. We're trying to be something, do something different than who we are. For those of you who grew up in a healthy environment, this might be easy for you. But many of you didn't grow up that way. Some of you weren't taken care of by your family, and this whole idea of self-care is a little foreign. In fact, it's kind of beaten out of you. Unfortunately, the church trained a lot of us to say, what you need is bad. Your entire existence is to support somebody else. And so this idea of who we are and self-care and what's going on inside of us, that's just this like underdeveloped muscle inside of us. It's funny that after a while, we can do this. In fact, we can build our spirituality bigger and bigger on this first stage, but when we haven't got a robust sense of self and who we are and what creates healthy us, everything else kind of teeters on this little piece underneath it, this stage one that's not developed. The number of people I've seen who've burned out, number of pastors I've seen burned out, I think primarily it's because they didn't have a robust sense of stage one. They didn't know how to take care of themselves. What makes me happy? Who am I? These are important questions, and I think they're important spiritual questions. Because I believe everything's built on top of that. And the beauty of this stage one is this is where a vast majority of the strength, our strength comes from. Our energy. Our power to do the things we can do in the world. And you've all felt it. When you're healthy and taking care of you and someone needs something from you, no problem. But when you're not taking care of you, when you're tapped out, when you're trying to be something you're not, and someone needs something from you, what's the first reaction? I can't. I don't have enough. Now, I think stage one is a vital part of our spirituality. And I think it's the foundation of everything. And some of you will feel like you kind of are missing stage one. And some of you are looking at stage one saying, you know what? I think I've worked on this enough. I think I need something more. I'm looking for something more. Some purpose in our lives for how we spend our lives and how we spend our time. And if you're feeling that way right now, you probably need to do it in a different way. We call this next way stage two. I first asked you how much energy you have these days. You know, do you have enough to take all the hits of life? Now I want to ask you this. How did you learn to drive a car? Did someone, you know, you find keys on the ground one day after never seeing anyone ever drive a car before? You picked up the keys, walked into a car, figured out what that round thing was and all the buttons and the pedals and how to make them all work in the right way? No, of course not. You probably did it like I did. You know, you're 6 years old sitting on your dad's lap. And then you get tall enough so you can hit the pedals. And so you figure out how to do the pedals. Then you figure out how to start it. And you figure out how to do all this stuff, right? We learn things by watching people who've come before us. That's the core of stage two spirituality. We build our spirituality on the scaffolding of people who've come before us. Sometimes it's entire systems of thinking. Sometimes it's on a single person. It's what you grew up with. A church community can be anything. But instead of starting your spirituality kind of like blank slate, come up with it completely on your own, what you do is you emulate a group of people or another person. And you do your spirituality that way. It's kind of interesting. When you look at the Old Testament, the people there were going through this kind of amazing time, right at the beginning of the Old Testament, so very beginning of the biblical record. People are just, you know, not sure what's going on with God. God's angry. God's not angry. They're never sure what's making them angry, what's not making God angry. And suddenly, God, kind of in this, or at least this is how the story reads, comes down to them with a bunch of rules. And she says this, you know, here's a bunch of rules, and these will make me happy. That's how the author writes it. And you've all heard these rules. It's things like, don't wear cloth woven of two different kinds of thread, and, you know, don't sit on a seat that a woman who's had menstruating is set on. Is it okay if I can say menstruating here? I just learned there's actually a noun for that. I've been reading a lot about this lately. We're actually doing a series on this, so I know more about Leviticus now than I ever thought I would ever know. But up until that point, the gods were capricious, right? They never knew what made God happy and sad. So they would always do more. What if we do more? What if we sacrifice more? What if we, you know, give up our first child? Maybe then the gods won't be angry at us anymore. And so this idea of God giving these rules, I think was probably the most comforting thing they'd ever heard of. Now we know. Oh, when I do this, I just need to do this. And when I do this, then I just need to do this. And then God will be happy. We look at it backwards and go, oh, that looks really restrictive. But from their point of view, they finally understand what's right and what's wrong. And that's the core of stage two. It's how you feel, I shouldn't say it this way. Stage two often brings this feeling of safety and security, that we know the right answers, that we don't have to guess anymore. We know that everyone who came before us believes these things. All we need to do is believe those same things and everything will be okay. Stage two is pretty amazing. It's been villainized as a religious rite or as people who are intolerant. And the reality is some of them are, but some aren't. I know some of you have been hurt by stage two people. I have been too. And some people have found amazing spirituality in stage two. There's probably as many stage two groups as there are people out there. And it's the stage two group as long as everyone in that group kind of believes the same thing. That's how it works. But think about this. If one of the agreements that we're going to do is to take care of each other and love each other, that's stage two. It's the Red Cross, isn't it? Or how about we're going to treat people with respect and dignity? We're all going to agree on that. And that's our stage two-edness. It's the civil rights movement. Stage two has incredible power to unify a group of people. It's amazing because you're not constantly dealing with what do we believe. You all agree. And you kind of sit in that. And so there's incredible power. The things you can do, the amount of people you can mobilize for stage two is just fantastic. And there's a sense in stage two of just peace. You see it in the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses that come to your door. They're not questioning their faith. They believe it. You can tell them anything you want. They're just like, no, I believe this. It's beautiful. I watched my mom, who I think was probably a really healthy stage two. She believed fundamentally right until she died. And I think it brought her amazing comfort. There's a strength in stage two that only comes in stage two. Even the coming together of Friends Church, what we're doing right here, it's a little stage two. I know some of you are going, oh, that's dirty. We are not stage two. Come on. But we are, right? We're coming together. There's a commonality to our beliefs. Now, Friends Church doesn't say you have to believe what we believe. We don't say it's right, but we talk a lot about taking water, right? If you're like, I will never take water a day in my life, chances are you're going to get a little annoyed here because we talk about it a lot. We're a little stage one, too. Our last series, we talked all about attachment. That's about self, understanding self. We have values that we follow here. All sorts of things. And though, again, we don't say everyone has to hold them, which is kind of the core of stage two, we still kind of function in this unified way. Because there's a strength in stage two. There's a strength in talking about it in stage two ways. And that's cool. Some of you, though, stage two maybe doesn't work for you anymore. Doesn't pass kind of logical scrutiny anymore. Might it be something you grew up with? I don't even know why it happened. There's any number of reasons. I've heard so many stories about why this doesn't work. But for some reason, stage two no longer works. And for those of you feeling this, it might mean you need to do your spirituality in another way. We call this stage three. I'm not going to, actually, you know, before we do this, I'm going to have a little metaphor later on. And if everything works, it's going to be awesome. And if it doesn't, we're all going to get evacuated and the fire department's going to come. So let's just see how this works. If anyone sees it smoking, point, give me one of these and like wave and point at this thing. That would be bad. Okay. Oh yeah, we're there. Oh yeah, this is going to be good. So I'm not going to lie to you. Stage three, it's awesome. Super hard. Like, not a little bit hard, super hard. Because it basically says, stage two doesn't work for me. The group, the ideas that the group had, what we all agreed upon, isn't working for me anymore. And so everyone, you have to rethink everything. And it's painful. Now, I'm not saying everyone needs to get to stage three. In fact, some of you, I think, should never get to stage three. It's part of what we learned in the first time we did this. The first time was like, everyone's got to get to stage four. We realized, wait a second. I don't actually think everyone needs to move up in stages. Some people need to stay in the stage they're on and just build on that. But stage three revolves around doubt. Have you ever had a moment where you suddenly realized, wait a second, I'm not sure I agree with that? Kind of happens all the time, you know. Someone will say, you know, sunshine's a crappy, the other day someone said to me, sunshine's a crappy mountain for snowboarding. And I'm like, I like snowboarding and I like sunshine. Someone says to you, yeah, you're not looking great in that outfit. And you're like, I love this outfit. What are you doing, right? You start to doubt what other people say and going, wait a second. I don't know that I agree with you. There's actually a guy in the Bible who's a poster child for this doubting. His name is Thomas. In fact, growing up, we called him Doubting Thomas. Just as a side note, I grew up in a stage two environment. Doubting Thomas was not a positive comment. That's like saying Thomas is going to hell or praying for Thomas. But Thomas is doubting the things that the other students of Jesus were saying. They're saying this, and he's going, I don't know if I agree with you. And that's not a good thing in a stage two environment. But in a stage three environment, that's incredibly healthy. Doubting is the core. Experience, logic, rationality, that's what reigns supreme. And you crash test everything that you believed, everything you were taught, everything you picked up from that scaffolding of stage two, you crash test it against that. And say, hey, wait a second. I don't know if I believe that anymore. Everything's open for questioning. Everything. Does Jesus exist? Did he die? Did he rise from the dead? Is the Bible true? Is the Word of God anything other than something that some guy wrote down? Is God alive? Is there anything that we've ever believed that is true in any sense of the word? Stage three takes it all apart. It wrestles it all through. And people gain a sense of knowing in their spirituality that you can't do in stage two. Stage two, there's a sense of we agree and we don't need to question it. Stage three says we're going to tear it all apart and see how it works. But underneath it all, for some of us, it's the only way we can do our spirituality. But it's the healthiest thing we can possibly do, to just question everything. And some of your parents are looking at me going, please don't say that to my child. Reality is your university profs are saying that, so. But the reality is, even though you might not need to do that, your kid's spirituality might need to question everything. To tear it all apart. And not in that sense of, let's stay in stage two and you can dabble over there, you can read a book over there. No, I'm saying no. Be an atheist for a while. Be an agnostic for a while. Tear it all apart. Some of your kids, in order to grow their spirituality, absolutely, fundamentally need that. And you holding that back is actually holding back their spirituality. Even though it was probably the scariest thing you've ever heard, because in your mind, being part of the group is how you do this thing. For your kid, they need to tear it all apart. Figure out how it works. I have no clue why some people need to go to stage three and some people can stay in stage two. I've thought about it for a year now, and I don't know why. The reality is, some of us have to go to stage three, and some of us will never have to go to stage three. We're still okay. Thing with stage three is, it's all about rationality. If something doesn't make sense, if something doesn't fit with what you learned about yourself in stage one, it goes out the window. You tear it all apart. And for those of you in stage three, here's what I encourage you. Take it all apart. Be robust. Don't let anything stay on the table. If you want to question something, question it. Question it as fully as you need to question it. Don't be scared of where it's going to take you. Tear it all apart. I think that is growth for some people in their spiritual journey. And if we don't do that, I think we're going to stymie. Our spirituality won't grow. Now some of you, you've been tearing things apart for a long time. You've torn everything apart. You've questioned everything. And now it feels like your spirituality is about as big as your logic, right? I have it all figured out. God's in a box. Everything's fine. But for some reason, that doesn't feel good enough. Some of you have talked to me about this and you're going, oh yeah. You want something more back in your spirituality. The logic and the rationality, it worked. It helped you get from two, but now it's like spirituality is kind of dry and mathematical. And if that's where you are, chances are you need to do it another way. We call this wait stage four. Stage four is a tricky stage. We call it mysticism, which basically means we're not really sure how it all works. There's a guy named Rudolf Altman who describes it this way. Mysticism also obviously has to do with mystery. Mystics acknowledge the enormity of the unknown, but rather than being frightened by it, they seek to penetrate ever deeper into that they may understand more. Even with the realization that the more they understand, the greater the mystery will become. You can tell as a stage three person, you're like, that makes no sense. Of course it doesn't. That's why it's a different phase. Stage four isn't about self and understanding self and taking care of self like stage one, although it has a robust understanding of that, and it's a healthy view of that. It isn't about safety and religious groupings like stage two is, even though, again, it understands how people are motivated and how to move people. It isn't all about rationality like stage three, although it doesn't deny rationality. It embraces rationality. It just says rationality isn't the final kind of metric that we're going to use. Stage four embraces the mystery. It leans into the paradox of wanting to know and yet not knowing. And it's comfortable there. Stage four is founded on the belief that nothing is as clear as we might want it to be. We do things for more complex reasons than each of the stages before embraced. When we did the Thin Place series we just finished, we're trying to connect you guys to a stage four. Because often it transcends rationality. How you connect with God is bigger than what you thought was going to happen or what the group told you was going to happen. That's stage four. I'm not sure where you are in your spiritual journey right now, what stage you're working on right now. But I want to express the feelings of each stage through something that's near and dear to my heart as a Mennonite, a pancake. All my Mennonite relatives are smiling right now. Or at least the journey to making a pancake. So you see, some of us are hungry. That's what we know about ourselves, right? We're hungry and we want some food. We want a pancake. We don't really care where the pancake came from, who brought us the pancake. We just want a pancake. That's stage one, right? Self. What does self need? I'm hungry. If someone walked up and gave you a pancake, you're like, that's fantastic. Everyone leaned back a little bit. Oh yeah, we're good. Stage one is all about understanding what I need and what I want. That's beautiful. So for you, you want a pancake, and my pan isn't nearly hot enough, but at least it didn't set off the fire alarms. Now stage two is different. Stage two also realizes that, hey, I'm hungry, but stage two says, yes, but I actually want to cook myself a pancake. And so how do you learn to cook a pancake? In my case, I went to my mom and said, Mom, I want to learn to cook a pancake. She says, well, let's get the recipe book out. We opened up the Mennonite Treasury. Bob's your uncle. We learned how to make a pancake, right? That's the beauty of stage two. Now, in stage one, there's just a sense of, I'm hungry. Stage two, there's a sense of, I want to do something about this. But you do it by learning the way to do it. Right? You learn to cook a pancake by someone who already knows how to cook a pancake. And you cook the pancake the same way every time. You go to this into the thing, you open up your recipe book, you take out the pancake recipe, you measure everything out with your thing, right? Doing exactly like you're supposed to do it. The beauty of stage two is, whenever you make a pancake, it's a good pancake. Right? That's the fantastic part about it. It works every time. It's fantastic. And spirituality in stage two is the same way. It's not something new and different every time. It's like you open it up, you do it the same way every time, and as long as it's working, it works every time. It's kind of beautiful. Stage two actually, you know, stage two is fantastic. That's what we learned the last time. We kind of, you know, poo-pooed on stage two. Stage two is really fantastic. There's a beauty in it. There's an understanding. There's a knowing. There's a knowing that you get in stage two. You don't get in the other stages. And you get to eat great pancakes every time. Now, here's what happens in stage three. Stage three goes, okay, I'm hungry. Yes, check. Sorry, I just want to check my pancake here. I'm hungry, so that's stage one. I learned how to cook a pancake from a recipe, so I know how to cook. I know all the things. You oil the pan, you blah, blah, blah. You know everything. But do you think 20 generations of Mennonite grandmas really knew how to cook the best pancake? Like, what if 4 eggs is better than 2? Did anyone check that? What if you add protein powder to a pancake? Does it make it better? Worse? Cottage cheese. These are all experiments I've done. It doesn't make it better. But you question it, right? How many of you actually knows what it tastes like if you put too much baking powder into your pancakes? You've made the mistake I've had. That's a teaspoon, not a tablespoon. Oh. Oops. That's the beauty of stage three. There's a knowing that only comes in stage three because you tear it all apart. You're not ready to build it up again. You're just tearing it apart. And there's a learning that comes in tearing it apart you get nowhere else. I suddenly realized every time I tore something apart when I was a kid, you know, there's a clock radio. I tore it apart. Why? I wanted to know what happened inside. Stage three, you get to learn what happens inside. That's the beauty of it. Is it easy? No. In stage two, whenever you pull out the recipe and you make a pancake, what do you get? A good pancake. In three, you tore it all apart. You question everything. Do you get a good pancake every time? No. You're ordering takeout quite regularly. And that's the pain in the butt about stage three. It's got some good parts, again, because you learn. But the cost of it is You don't get a good pancake every time. It's different. And that takes us to stage four. Stage four is an interesting one. Because we understand how, you know, we understand we're hungry. We learned how to cook. We understand all that. So we understand the basics. We've questioned it all, which is good. So we've learned kind of what things taste like. What happens when you put too much milk in it? What happens if you put not enough? What happens if you do this? What happens if you do that? These are all healthy things, right? But in stage four, we start to rebuild what we took apart in three. Not because it's right, like in stage two, but because it fits us. It takes one, two, three, understands all of that, and builds a completely new pancake recipe that may actually be the exact same pancake recipe you grew up with. But you come to it in a new way. Or it might be a pancake that you've never, ever seen before. But you love it. And it's amazing. This whole series is about helping you learn how to make a spiritual pancake. Some of you have no desire to tear this all apart and to rebuild the entire concept of pancake recipes. And that's okay. Some of you do. That's okay too. Some of you are focused on just, I'm hungry and that's all I understand right now. That's fantastic. Some of you are focused on, I just need someone to tell me how to do it because I can't figure this out all on my own. I just want to eat a pancake and I want it to be good. Great. The way we're going to talk about this next series has enough stage two in it that you're not just going to get it thrown to the wolves. We actually did that a while. I was talking with Grant Pollock over there. We used to do this thing called What's on Your List. And we basically would like tell you nothing. Just say, have some quiet time and figure out what's on your list. And everyone came back to us. They're like, yeah, I got nothing. We stage four the crap out of that thing, didn't we? And unless people are in stage four, what are they doing? They're like, I don't even understand. Give me some framework here. Give me like a scaffolding to help me out. So this series is going to be built enough in stage two that you guys will have something to work with. It'll have enough stage three in it that says, you need to question? Great. We're not saying you have to get to stage three, but if you're there, question everything we've talked about. We're going to talk about skills. We're going to talk about things we've experienced. We're going to talk about all sorts of stuff. And if it doesn't work for you, that's great. That's part of the journey too. And if you get to stage four where you come up with a completely new pancake recipe, that's fine too. But even if it's the same pancake recipe that you grew up with, you know it in a new way. You know in a deep way because you tore it all apart, you tried 100 different things, and you came to a new realization that said, actually, the one that I grew up with, it works. And if the one you grew up with doesn't work, you come up with a completely new one, that's fantastic too. If my pan was hot enough, this would be what's called the riai, which is a completely new way of making a pancake. It looks nothing like what you guys grew up with. You actually take a can and chop it all up, and you have kind of like pancake shrapnel. And it's delicious. So let me encourage you guys, come back next week. If you can't be here physically, podcast, do the whole thing. We're going to go on this journey together. There will be enough no matter what stage you're at. There's no need to go to different stages, but we have learned this. Each stage seems to build on the other one. If you haven't done your work in stage one, chances are all the other stages above it kind of do this. Some of you, and I've talked with some of you this week even, you're in stage one right now. You're going back to counselors and saying, hey, I need to work on stage one. That's great. No matter what stage you're on, it seems these need to build. Don't feel you need to move up or down this thing. Wherever you are is good. If the ones you're working on isn't working for you, go to the next one. It's going to be a fun series. Can't wait to do it, and I'm over time. So have a great week, everybody.